Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of the call. If you'd like to ask a question during that time, please press star then one. Today's conference is being recorded. Any objections? You may disconnect at this time. Now I'd like to turn over the meeting to Andrea Medeiros. You may begin.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us. We're going to talk about the Walrus haul-out here today. We have a number of folks who are on with us and that will be able to answer your questions. I'm going to first, we'll go through and have those folks introduce themselves. Then some of them are going to give some opening statements kind of to set the background and kind of bring you up to date on where things are with how we're dealing with the haul-out, give community perspective, and so forth. Following all that, we are going to open the call up for questions. The call, you're on mute, of course, as the operator had said. When the Q&A is going on, you'll be able to indicate that you are wanting to ask a question, and we'll handle those one at a time. With that, I'm going to offer over the line to Tony Fischbach with the USGS. He's going to talk about walrus biology a bit.
Thank you, Andrea. I'm with USGS, a wildlife biologist. I just wanted to offer sort of a general background on Pacific walrus biology and their distribution, just for the general audience, the press. Pacific walrus are one single population. They spend the winter, they spend their life with sea ice for the females. The males can occupy areas that are ice-free without that much trouble. The females, however, must rest between foraging bouts. Traditionally, they've rested on sea ice in the Chukchi Sea throughout the summer. Starting in 2007, sea ice disappeared from large sectors of the entire Chukchi Sea, and the walruses came ashore to the U.S. shores for the first time in large numbers, thousands and tens of thousands in subsequent years. The only years this hasn't been seen recently are years when small amounts of sparse ice have remained offshore in northeastern Chukchi Sea, and they simply made the most of that ice to remain near their foraging grounds. So the main point here is that this is a new phenomenon of large coastal haul-outs forming on the U.S. shores of the Chukchi Sea that has only been seen during years of complete loss of sea ice in the Chukchi Sea. And from that, I'll hand that over to back to the moderator, please.
Great, Tony. Thank you. And next, we're going to have Leo Ferrer III give a little bit of opening remarks. Oh, he's a tribal council president with the Native Village of Point Lay. Leo, would you like to give a statement then? Operator, could you please open his line?
Line is open.
Okay, I'm open. It's open.
Great. Thank you, Leo.
Hey. Yep. As all of you have known, Point Lay took a stewardship and an active role in protecting our walruses in our community back in 2007. And then we also took active measures working with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services, USGS, and the Walrus Commission on putting in flight restrictions in our area. And even restrictions to our own community members about disturbing the walruses. We've also took active measures to try not to disturb the walruses and do a study at the same time. We're active right now with satellite tagging and carcass surveys and cameras being put up to document how big of a haul-out that we're having in this community. And so we've got some little bit of rules and regs set in place with other agencies. And then we take an active role about protecting our community and our native village way of life. And this is, as all you guys all know, that this is a staple food for this community. And so we took a lot of active measures to protect our animals within our area that we depend on for our food. And this is the first time that, yeah, the world is right. This is the first time we've seen thousands and thousands of walrus haul out onto the beach instead of on the ice. And so it's a real concern to this community and to our nine communities in our area that are up here in the Arctic Circle. We also, this community does not have the capacity to house anybody visiting. This is a small community. Our population is only about 246 people. And it's a subsistence community. About 80% of this community relies on subsistence. And then we'd like to also say that we had a photojournalist, even though we sent out all these requests to the media. And since you guys sent out a newsletter about a week and a half ago, is my guess, that we sent out a newsletter for a possible haul-out, and we stated in that news release that we were respectively asked media and private media, private photographers, private writers, journalists, not to come to Point Lay on the for the concern or the for a story on the walrus, and Point Lay will give you guys a story on it when we're done. We're a small community, so we're doing the best we can with the fluctuation with all the media. And we had a person sneak into this community, and we requested that he did not come, and he disobeyed. He disobeyed our community wishes. He disobeyed our tribal government wishes. And this man was from the United States, and he was a private journalist. So we felt like that whatever we said in black and white and sent out a news media requesting that nobody come around here and go do. This man had rented an airplane and disobeyed our flight, the FAA, and our flight restrictions that we set in place. He disobeyed our request not to come to the community uninvited. So not just me, but the community members of this community are upset with this man. Or we're upset with the media and anybody else associated with the media. Please respect our wishes. This is a tribal government, and this is a very disturbing one. You guys disrespect our way of living, disrespect our community and our wishes, or the fact that you guys want a story and want to think you guys could come here and then go rent somebody's boat and go across and disturb the walruses on your guys' own. That's not permitted. Not even our own people are permitted to go over there and disturb the walruses with a mass haul out like this. We always limit our own people even. And then
thank you very much, Leo. Next we have Vera Metcalf with the Eskimo Walrus Commission. Vera, would you like to have an opening statement?
Yes, thank you. My name is Vera Metcalf. I'm the director for the Eskimo Walrus Commission at Koerik in Nome. Koerik is a non-profit regional organization that represents over 20 communities, and The Wallace Commission has been around since 1978. It currently has 19 communities all along the coast from Barrow down to Bristol Bay. And Point Lay is one of our communities that is a member of the commission. Leo Ferreira is our commissioner representing the native village of Point Lay. Since 1997, our commission has worked cooperatively with Fish and Wildlife Service in the co-management of this Pacific walrus through cooperative agreements authorized under Section 119 of the Marine Mammal Protection Act. We do play a vital role as an organization that provides legitimacy to the management of subsistence walrus hunting by including the voice of subsistence hunters like Leo in the management of a resource and any decision-making process, as we try to be a venue for the communities to express their priorities and concerns regarding walrus-related issues, research, or emerging issues such as this Point Lay walrus haul-out. We look forward to working with Fish and Wildlife Service and the community of Point Lay as this issue moves forward. We respect the wishes of Point Lay and their concerns, and we're hoping to work jointly with everyone. So I'm looking forward to working with this issue as it continues. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Vera. The next person we're going to have speak is Jonathan Snyder. He's a biologist that is working with Point Lay, Eskimo Walrus Commission on the walrus management issues. And so he's going to talk now about where we are with the haul out and managing. And he's with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Hi, folks. I guess, first of all, I just wanted to thank Leo and the Native Village of Point Lay and the community for all of their support over the last 9 or 10 years. We could not ask for a better partner than Native Village of Point Lay. I think the fact that walrus continue to haul out near the community of Point Lay year after year is testament of the fact of the great stewardship role that community has taken. I would imagine if that were not a safe place, the walrus would not keep returning. So thank you for all your support and all your help in our joint endeavors, Leo and the community of Point Lay. So as we all know, walrus hauled out in the community sometime last weekend. I was up there in the community last week working with Leo and a few folks from the Alaska Sea Life Center. There were lots of walrus milling around in the water. It took them a couple of days to, muster up the group energy to haul out. But we know that happened sometime over the weekend. Fish and Wildlife Service, as Leo said, is working with the community. The community will be doing some haul-out monitoring work for us. They'll be doing some carcass survey work for us. None of these endeavors would be possible without community support and participation. We are currently, as the management agency, we are currently working to get the word out about the haul out to pilots. FAA is assisting us in this endeavor. We have updated our flight guidelines a little bit and are currently working. We'll have those up on our website hopefully this afternoon, and we're currently working to get those updated guidelines out to air carriers and charter operators operating out of Barrow and Kotzebue.
Great. Thank you, Jonathan. And so I believe that is the last of opening remarks and statements. And Giovanna, if you would go ahead and open up the Q&A portion of the meeting, that would be great.
Certainly. At this time, we will begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, please press star 1. If you wish to withdraw your question, please press star 2. Again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. One moment for our first question. The first question comes from Suzanne Goldenberg. Your line is open.
Oh, hi. Thank you very much for taking the call. I wanted to know, for example, have fish and wildlife, I'm not quite clear, Jonathan Schneider, do you actually see the walruses yourself at Point Lay? Do you have their own pictures? How has the haulout grown or changed since they first came ashore? If you have dates for when they first came ashore and progression, and can give us an indication that this is a migration that's increasing. And, you know, didn't notice you saying very much about the haulout itself. And second, how is the haulout, how does this correspond with the oil drilling area? I saw on the USGS map, the tracking map, that it looks like some of the geotagged animals are quite close to the drilling area. Is there any observer reports from Shell or others of the walruses? Is there any interaction between oil activity and the Hannah Shoal feeding areas? Thank you.
So this is Jonathan Snyder with Fish and Wildlife Service. So I will note, as I said, I was in the community of Point Lay last week working with Tribal Council President Leo Ferreira III, a couple other community members. We did see many thousand walrus amassed in the water offshore. They had not come to shore by the time I left. So community members have confirmed that walrus are, as of a couple of days ago, out on the barrier islands. At this point in time, we don't have a real good estimate of how many animals are there. Our folks on the ground out there will try to get across the lagoon. They've had some bad early fall weather going on there, and have not been able to get out on a haul out monitoring excursion. We do expect the haul out to continue to grow through the next couple of weeks as animals continue to come to shore and then start moving south. Maybe I'll let Jim McCracken address your other questions.
Yeah, this is Jim McCracken with Fish and Wildlife Service. I can try to answer some of your questions about Shell's operations, but I'll need you to repeat those one at a time, hopefully.
One quick clarification. What is many thousands? Is it 5,000 or 30,000?
Initial indications suggest probably 5,000 to 6,000 walrus out there last week. We don't have any additional intelligence in the last few days as to whether or not that haul out has increased. Maybe I'll let Leo address this, but I think you guys had some pretty strong west winds and some pretty high surf.
Yes, sir, that's right. We haven't been able to get out there to do a visual spotting of how many walruses, because we have a on-current storm right now, and we haven't been able to make it across because it's stormy and the ocean is stormy and the lagoon is stormy.
Okay, thanks. Stay dry. On the the Hannah Shoal, like the feeding areas and the oil and gas activity, I was just, you know, I was looking at the dots, you know, the yellow dots tracking the walruses, and was wondering if they were coming into contact at all with any drilling activity, how close they were coming to this sort of drilling activity, if you were getting any observer reports from Shell.
Yeah, we are getting reports from Shell daily on their activities and their observations. I looked at those real closely to see how many there are. Our regulatory people say they've seen about, they've tallied about 700 walruses and recorded their behaviors and things, but I don't have an exact figure on that.
And is this all operating within the degree of separation that's required by the regulations?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay, Suzanne, you're all set then?
Yes, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. So, operator, if you could please open up the line for Julia O'Malley.
Julia, your line is open.
Oh, thank you. I am wondering about the timeline. How does it usually go? How long does the haul-out last? At what point do the animals usually move on? That was one question. The second question is for Leo. I wondered if he could tell me when traditionally the hunting season is for walrus and how that has changed over the last 10 years, if that has changed because of the change with the ice. That's all.
Would you like to address that, Leo?
Springtime.
Oh, I can't quite hear. Leo, could you start over?
Yep, springtime. Our annual walrus hunting usually starts springtime in June. Is that right? June, right?
Mm-hmm.
In June, and then that's because we still have ice out here in the ocean from the winter time.
Has that changed at all over the last couple of years?
Yep. I got to say, yeah, it's changed a little bit. It's to where the point where the ice is so thin that we hope the walrus are still on the ice. But if not, it's kind of hard to land a walrus in the water, you know. It's better to have them catched on ice so we could get all the meat and everything.
And
yeah, usually in June. But it's changed to where the ice is too thin and all time, I guess, we just start receiving big, big haul-outs in numbers and there is no ice for the walrus to rest on, so they need the ice to rest on, so the only place for the walrus is in the fall time is just to come to shore, and that's what's been happening the past 5 years or so.
Leo, how long do they stay ashore before they move on?
Right until we start freezing up, right? Somewhere around September. Early
and
October. Then up, then they'll take off back to the ice.
Can you talk about what it's like when you go to the place where the walrus have been? What's it like when you go there after they are gone? What do you find when you go there?
Mass haul-out of feces. And a few carcasses from, either it's a numerous things could happen, either from disturbance from airplanes, helicopters, disturbance from polar bears, brown bears. So, but most of the disturbance is from human aircraft. Hello.
Hello. So the disturbance causes them to there to be stampedes, and some of them die.
Yep, young ones. The young ones are real. They're susceptible to getting stampeded, and then we see a lot of deceased babies because of stampedes or disturbances causing the stampedes, or maybe loud noise from aircrafts or ships. Loud noise would disturb them. Bright lights and bright clues will disturb them. And polar bears and bears. So this is fall time, so we're expecting we'll probably get a sighting of a polar bear again this year, or probably a brown bear again disturbing the walruses. This is fall time, so the polar bears are looking for meat, and so are the bears. So are the grizzly bears.
Can I ask you one more question, Leo?
Fire away.
Can you tell me what percentage you estimate of the food that people eat in the village is subsistence, and how big of a piece of that is walrus?
You want to know the percentage of we eat all the meat?
So is it, would you say like store-bought food is 40% of the diet that most people are eating and the rest is subsistence foods?
I got to say it this way. 80% of this community is subsistence lifestyle. I only got like about a 20% workforce development in this community, so most of us are on welfare. So we all depend on our food from our land and from the ocean. And that ocean is our garden. It's the biggest source of food for us natives.
How big of a food source is walrus? Could you describe that?
It's about our biggest sources of food is just about all. I can't put it in a percentage number because I'm not gonna exaggerate it.
Well,
I went out to go hunting right now. I'd take the whole walrus home because I need it to last me all year long. Is that good enough?
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you. I think those are my questions for now. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Chelsea Harvey, your line is open.
Hi, thanks so much. My question is whether anyone can comment on whether the photographer who took the photos last week, Gary Brosh, whether there's any indication that he could have actually violated the Marine Mammal Protection Act, and whether anyone can comment on if there's an ongoing investigation into that. And then more generally, if someone could explain just a little more specifically what kinds of exact flight restrictions there are in the area, or that might be placed on the area in the coming days.
This is Mac Whistler with the Fish and Wildlife Service Office of Law Enforcement in Fairbanks. I can answer the first part of your question.
Okay.
And that is that we are currently looking into the situation with the photographer, but because that is ongoing, we can't make any more comments about that. As to whether or not there was a violation, et cetera. We have to gather all the facts first. So that's about all I can say on that. As far as the flight restrictions and things like that, I will have to see if someone else can answer those for you better. Maybe Jonathan.
Sure. And before you go, could you say your full name again?
Sure. I'll spell it for you, too. My name is Mac, M-A-C. Last name is Whistler, W-H-I-S-L-E-R. And
okay.
My title is Resident Agent in Charge.
Resident Agent in Charge. Thanks so much.
Sure.
So this is Jonathan Snyder with Fish and Wildlife Service, and your question was about flight restrictions. So Fish and Wildlife Service doesn't have any authority to impose flight restrictions. We have been working with the FAA. In this particular situation, FAA does not have authority to actually close airspace for wildlife. So when we say when people are saying flight restrictions, they're actually, I guess, referring to our guidelines. Fish and Wildlife Service has had guidelines published for many years. Things are identified through notices to airmen, sectional charts, that sort of thing. And as I said earlier, we are working currently to update those guidelines a little bit. I can give you a verbal description of those if that would be helpful, I guess. So, sure. So pilots of single-engine aircraft should not knowingly overfly or fly within a half mile of walruses hauled out on land or ice to avoid causing a disturbance. If weather or aircraft safety require flight operations within a half mile of walruses, small single-engine aircraft should maintain a 2,000-foot minimum altitude. Pilots of helicopters and multi-engine aircraft should not knowingly overfly or fly within 1 mile of walruses hauled out on land or ice to avoid causing a disturbance. If weather or aircraft safety require flight operations within 1 mile of a haul-out site, helicopters and multi-engine aircraft should maintain a 3,000-foot minimum altitude. Now, these are guidelines. These are what we feel will help to prevent most disturbances. No guarantee that following these guidelines, will prevent all disturbances. They are simply guidelines.
I see. And it is, in fact, illegal to, according to the Marine Mammal Protection Act, to operate an aircraft in a way that harasses the walrus. But is that kind of subjective, or is there a concrete definition of what harassment actually constitutes?
Sure, this is Mac. I can answer that for you.
Sure, thank you.
Sure. I guess the shortest way is from the definitions from the statute. I can paraphrase. The harassment basically means any act that has the potential to injure a marine mammal or the potential to disturb them, and that's basically how it reads. So beyond that, it's not much further defined.
I see. Okay, thank you so much.
If I could just interject here, this is Anthony Fishbach from USGS. I guess the important point to point out here is that the consequences of a disturbance with walruses hauled out on land can be substantial. We've observed large numbers of carcasses on the U.S. shores at some of these haulouts up by Icy Cape. We counted over 130 animals. On the Russian side, even larger numbers have been found dead. These are primarily young animals, newborn calves, young of the year, or 1-year-old calves that are most susceptible. We've done some analysis on this at USGS in terms of what that means for the population, and it turns out it can have real consequences for the population at large if we have large losses like this at these coastal haulouts. So I just want to provide that context from a biological perspective.
Sure, and the number that you just gave me, 130 animals on the Russian side, and was that from this year or last year?
No, that was on the U.S. side, Icy Cape. That was 2011,
US side.
I believe. we observed that. I was the observer. On the Russian side, there have been larger numbers, larger than 100, in some cases approaching 1,000 animals dead at some of the carcass sites there.
And what dates were those from?
I have to go back and review the literature to give you specifics on that.
Okay, I'm sorry, but it was from this year?
Not from this year. No, this was
not from this year. I see.
2011, a number of years back.
Oh, I see. Thank you so much.
The cause of the disturbance was unknown. We just simply saw that the consequences of it. And USGS has done demographic studies to look at what that can mean for the population, and it turns out it can have consequences for the trajectory of the population. It can cause a change in the population trajectory if we have sustained losses like that over the years.
I see. Thank you.
Operator, do you want to make another call for questions?
Certainly. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. Our next question comes from Katie Orlinsky. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks. I have another question for Leo, and it's about not necessarily since 2007, but maybe in the past 10, 15, 20 years, what would he normally see in the community during this time of year, so right now when the haulout's happening, and through October, just sort of to get an idea what was happening before 2007.
I got to say, I think that's when we noticed there was a... You got me thinking way back. That's a long ways. And what happened with the walruses? Is that what your question is? What happened?
Yeah, just, trying to think back before 2007 when you first noticed this happening to get an idea of what was normal 20 years ago or 30 years ago.
Yeah, it was unusual to see the walrus hauled out. They'd never hauled out before on the beach. So it was just unusual. Yeah, we would see single walruses here and there at the time back then. It was real unusual to see a major haul out. We'd see small haul outs. 1, 2, 3, maybe 5. And then the ice, I'm pretty sure the ice was still floating around sometimes. So it's just unusual that we started seeing no ice and start seeing large numbers of haulouts of the walruses at the time. So it was just unusual activity at the time to us. Does that answer your question?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Are we ready for the next question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Julia, your line is open.
Well, I just wondered about availability to call people after this call. If there are follow-up questions, is there a mechanism to do that? Is that okay?
Who are you talking to?
All you guys. I just wasn't sure if we have other questions that come up later on as we're working, can we call you? Or do we have to call some one person who can then get in touch with you? Or how does it work for following up?
Sure, Julia. You can work through me, Andrea Medeiros.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. But the hope is, too, that as many questions as people have while they're on the phone, that we address those so we don't have to field so much. It takes up quite a bit of time to meet everybody's needs. So that's the hope here. Are there any further questions?
Currently, there are no questions in queue. As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. The next question comes from Chelsea Harvey. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks so much. So last year it seemed like the haulout attracted maybe a bit more media attention than it has in years past. So I was just wondering if that caused any more significant problems for the walruses or for the community of Point Lay than in years past, the media attention. And I'm also wondering if there's any data on disturbances that might have happened last year, any numbers on mortality events that might have happened last year. I'm just trying to get a sense of whether there was more attention last year than in years past and what kinds of issues that might have caused.
Leo, can you go ahead and take that question? That seems like be a perfect series of questions for you, and then Jonathan can provide additional information.
Yep, media. A lot of activity of media wanting to come here, and we even had media sneak in, then we had to put them right back on the airplane the very next day. And it's been a big attention. The Walrus Hollow's been attracting a lot of attention from all over the world, and I hope you guys get all your questions done today, because it's just it's overwhelming that we have to answer a lot of media questions, and at the same time we're trying to protect our walruses out here on the Hollow.
I understand. Did the media attention attract tourists at all, as well, people who weren't from the media but just came to see the Hollow?
Yep. We have people requesting to come here as tourists. We had even, we had a ship pass by through us, and they had a bunch of tourists, and they were wanting to come to Point Lay and pay so much ahead for a person, and we had to turn them around. And we've been getting tourists trying to come.
I see. And that was last year that the ship came by?
Oh, this is this year.
This year, oh wow.
Asked for permission and we told them no.
And if anyone has any information about mortality events last year, whether there were any major disturbances that caused major problems for the walrus fallout last year.
So this is Jonathan Snyder with Fish and Wildlife Service, and through a number of different efforts, mostly our local folks there at Point Lay, we believe there were about 60 mortalities last year. Not clear on causes of those, but due to trampling events, so not sure of the causes of the disturbance.
I see. And compared to other years, is that a big number or a small number?
Tony mentioned we had a mortality event at Icy Cape, which is about 55 miles or so north of Point Lay, and I believe that was in 2009, and I believe the estimate there was about 130 animals.
I see. Okay. Just one other slightly unrelated question. I'm wondering if there are any official images that are available that were safely taken from the haul out this year.
Yeah. So as Leo said earlier, the weather has been pretty stormy, and they have not been able to access the barrier islands there. And I don't so I don't believe that there are any official photos from this year.
Sure. Thanks so much, everyone.
So this is Andrea Medeiros, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Public Affairs here in for the region. And I just wanted to let folks know on the phone that we are have recently submitted a grant proposal to try and work or try and support outreach efforts. One element of which, in working with the community, would be to try and provide images from the haulout to hopefully meet some of the needs of media and also just general public interest regarding regarding the haulout. So we haven't yet heard back as far as whether we got funding for that grant, but it may be that we pursue that irregardless of whether we get funding in that grant.
This is Jonathan Snyder again. I would just note that, you know, there are photographs available. There are photographs available from past years. And I guess I would encourage media to please use that. You know, any time that photographs are being taken, there is a potential to disturb the animals. And our number one goal here is to prevent disturbances. So lots of photos from last year. Walrus on the beach or walrus on the beach.
And Jonathan, if I can toss in there, to ancillary to our research activities, we do take photos and ones that are suitable for media use. We post on a USGS website. You can find it by Googling or searching for USGS Walrus Gallery. There's both photos and there's also some video available there that may meet the needs of the press to communicate about this event.
And this is Andrea Medeiros again. I just want to also mention that the grant proposal is would be working with Point Lay and the Eskimo Walrus Commission, and we are also working with the Alaska Youth Media. What is it? Is it Alaska Youth? The Alaska Teen Media Institute and a number of other potential partners there to. Work together on an outreach communication strategy.
The next question comes from Katie Orlinsky. Your line is open.
Hello? Hello?
Yeah, go ahead with your question.
Okay. My question last year, even if it's only 1 week or 2 weeks.
I think your line is dropping out, so we're just getting bits and pieces. So maybe you can try and ask your question again.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I think so. Try again.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, great. This question is for everyone, and it's just about the timing of the haulout happening this year as opposed to last year, and if it happened earlier this year, and if that's been a trend since 2007.
Sure. So this is Jonathan Snyder with Fish and Wildlife Service. And in 2014, first reported date of a haul out was September 13th. In 2013, it was September 12th. There was no haul out, coastal haul out in Alaska in 2012. 2011, animals were first noted on shore on August 17th. In 2010, it was August 30th. In 2009, it was September 13th, and in 2008, there was no haul-outs in Alaska. There was still some remnant coastal ice, remnant ice hanging over the continental shelf. Walrus never came to shore. In 2007, walrus began coming to shore in Russia in mid-July, which was about a month earlier than they had ever witnessed. And small groups of walrus were seen on the Alaskan coast the first week of August. Hope that helps.
Yes, thank you.
The next question comes from Darren Ankrum. Your line is open.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for chatting today. Just hoping someone, I guess this is just for the floor, just hoping someone could elaborate a little bit about the connection between climate change, the lack of ice, and then the walrus fallout. Thanks.
Is that open?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is Jim McCracken. You know, we've seen rising temperatures, both sea surface temperatures and air temperatures in the Arctic, probably twice as fast here as anywhere else in the lower latitudes. And, of course, the ice has been going out at a faster rate sooner each year. And freeze-up is coming later each year. And, of course, when the ice completely melts out in the Chukchi Sea over the continental shelf, the walrus will eventually have to come to shore and haul out. You know, they spend about a week or so in the ocean before they have to come to shore and haul out. So it's all connected.
Gotcha. Thank you.
The next question comes from Dave Streets. Your line is open.
Yeah, thank you. Just a follow-up. What has been the largest haul-out on record in numbers, and what year?
This is Jonathan Snyder. If memory serves me correct, feel free to weigh in here, Tony. But if memory serves me correct, last year, 2014, I believe, was the largest haul-out we saw on the Alaska coast, and those estimates were 30,000 animals. Is that 35,000 animals? The Russian colleagues have seen haul-outs over on the Russian coast much, much larger than that. In, I believe it was 2000, and was it 2007, they reported a large coastal haul-out there that they estimated may have had 100,000 animals.
In 2010.
And in 2010 also.
Yeah, Sarasota Common has an estimated count of around 100,000 for several years. On the U.S. side, you know, the trouble with giving these numbers is that these numbers require overflights, they require good photography and consistent effort. And consistent effort is really difficult. Weather is often difficult, and there's, you know, real reasons for not flying a lot, you know, walrus haul-outs. So the numbers are really just a guideline. You know, there have been a number of published estimates from NOAA. USGS has published one from 2011 that indicated tens of thousands of walruses, perhaps four, you know, up to four tens of thousands of walruses. But it really isn't, it's not a very precise science of counting these walruses on shore because of the difficulty of counting them on shore. So it's not a very satisfactory answer. It's not like we have, you know, omniscience here. We're trying to avoid disturbance, but, you know, keep an eye on them. And it's a number of different agencies that are making that effort, and there's efforts made from the ground. But the ground counts are very difficult because you can't really take in the whole haul-out, which can extend up to almost a mile of beach line. So I hope that gives some perspective on the difficulties here for answering that question.
Yeah, thank you.
The next question comes from Julia O'Malley. Your line is open.
This is another question for Leo. I wondered if you could explain a little bit more or describe a little bit more about the things that the community is doing to help monitor and protect the walrus. Are you guys taking shifts or making trips around to see how things are doing out there?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, we are. We're active. We're active with the studies, myself and another coworker. We're active. We're ongoing. We do. We help with all the studies going on with the walruses, and we also do We help with carcass surveys. We help with minimizing the disturbance of the walrus, for sure. That's number one priority. And did that answer your question good enough?
That's pretty good. Yeah. Can you tell? I was wondering also, are you guys taking fewer animals, having a harder time hunting them for the reasons you described earlier? Has it been harder to get animals the last couple of years?
It sure has been because, you know, this is what we do with our own community. When it's become a haulout and they're already on the beach, we request it to our own native people that we request them not to go over and go hunt them due to the fact they're already hauled out on the beach and we're just going to cause a major stampede and we're going to have a mass kill off of the young ones. So we usually try to get the walruses, well, we'd like to get our walruses on the ice, preferably not on the beach due to the fact that it's our beach is sandy and rocky, and who wants to? You know, nobody doesn't want to eat rocks and sand, and it's too hard to process the meat once it's already dirty like that with the sand and embedded deep in the meat and deep in the blubber.
Mm.
But we prefer rather hunting our walruses on ice, so it's harder. It's harder to harvest our walruses right now. Right now, though, we're trying to. It's just harder. It's harder.
How many animals might people take in a season?
For the whole community?
Yeah, for the whole community. Just to get a sense of it.
You know what? As a matter of fact, it's so hard to get the animals these past couple of years is because of no ice, and then by the time they haul out, they're in such great numbers that we're going to try to I don't think anybody's got any walruses this year because due to the fact that we have a storm and the weather's not working right, and it all depends on the weather and the ice. Right now, I don't see anybody even getting any walruses right now because it's just too stormy to go across. And like we have a mass haulout going on right now.
So, but in the springtime, nobody got any in this springtime?
I don't think anybody got any this year. I think we all caught our. I think the walruses were still way far from us, and we're just hunting the bearded seal and seals and the whales still.
Yeah. Thank you, Leo.
This is Jonathan Snyder with Fish and Wildlife Service. Leo, I wonder if it might be helpful for folks, since they've never been to Point Lay, for you to describe a little bit about where the community sits, where the haul-out forms, the difficulty of getting from the community over to the barrier island to the haul-out. That might be helpful.
Yeah. Sure could elaborate on that some more. It is hard for us to... The community lives on we're about a mile away from, see, we have a lagoon system. We have a lagoon system, and we're connected to four rivers, and we have an ocean right in front of us, but we have to cross the lagoon. This lagoon is shallow. It's 4 feet to 8 feet deep, shallow lagoon system that we live in, and it stretches from southward, south of the community, about 35 miles south of the community, our lagoon system, and it also stretches north of us all the way like 46 miles up to Icy Cape, but then beyond that, it goes almost all the way to Wainwright, this lagoon system. and it's a shallow lagoon system, and it's hard to get across sometimes when the ocean tide is down. We can't go across to the spit side because it's too shallow, and then we can't access the spit side of the to get to the ocean side. And the haul out usually occurs fall time around this time of year, and it's always like about a 1 mile away, 1 mile to two miles away from the community, from where we're located on the spit side, and that's going northwards. And even storms like right now will hamper us from going across because the waves are just too rough and it's unsafe for anybody to go across right now, and the ocean is stormy, and it all depends on weather. We'd like to have nice weather, but when it's stormy like this, there's no access. No one can get across. Now when the tide is low, right now, anytime now, depending on weather, we could end up with a dry lagoon and nobody's going to be able to get across back and forth. And all the traveling is mostly done by boat. Small boats. Is that good enough?
Thanks, Leo. So I guess I understood from my visit up there last week that when the wind is blowing out of the east, it tends to blow the water out of that lagoon, and that makes it even more difficult for you to reach the barrier islands where the haul out occurs. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Yep, that's correct. Thank you.
Okay, we can go ahead, operator, and take the next question.
Mark Gutman, your line is open.
Yes, hello. Thank you, everybody, for putting this conversation together. I had a question. I'm not sure who could best comment on this, but I'm wondering if there would be any forthcoming restrictions or conditions perhaps placed on vessel traffic going from between Point Lay and the Hannah Shoal, that corridor. If there's potentially any conditions placed on Shell's drilling support vessels that would be moving back and forth between that area, the North Slope communities there, and the Hannah Shoal, the Walrus Use area. That in the context of perhaps 30,000 walrus hauling out in the near future?
Yeah, this is Jim McCracken with the Fish and Wildlife Service. We do have stipulations in our incidental take regulations that Shell has to abide by, that does have some restrictions on vessel operations around groups of walruses in the water and on the ice, as well as on land. So if they were to, say, go have a vessel going from Wainwright or Barrow to where the drill rig is, you know, for supplies or crew changes or whatever they may do, there are certain stipulations they have to abide by, such as keeping their speed low when they do see walruses and trying to maintain a distance of about a half mile between them and the walruses.
Okay. Anything specific resulting to this land-based haul-out developing?
Well, they would. Our guidelines would say they need to stay at least a mile away, but there's some other stipulations that the Bureau of Ocean Energy and Management has that doesn't allow them to get within 25 miles of the coast anyway.
All right. Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. There are no questions at this time.
Do we have anything else that we want to do?
Thank you, operator. Hold on one moment. I think seems like we have answered the bulk of for all the questions that we have on the phone call today. I want to thank everybody who's joined us. I want to let you know that we will make the that this news conference teleconference has been recorded, and we are going to make that available for your future reference. I want to open it up to those who have spoken here, answered your questions, to offer any final remarks. So I'll go ahead and open that up, and anybody who would like to make a final remark to the media, please go ahead and introduce yourself and your name, and go ahead and make your final remarks. Thank you.
This is USGS Tony Fischbach. I just want to point out to the press media that we have a web page that has all sorts of resources, including images, video, FAQs, and press releases from previous Coastal Haul-Out events to kind of provide the biological perspective. And the if you just Google Alaska, USGS Alaska Outreach or Media.
Actually, I haven't gone to alaska.usgs.gov.
You just go to alaska.usgs.gov. You'll find it at that web page.
Under the outreach media.
Thank you.
This is Andrea Medeiros, and I just want to also remind folks that we, on our homepage, have recently released a press release. Leo had mentioned this in his remarks, and that is on our homepage as well. And that's where, you know, basically we're asking that, along with the community, that the walrus be given space.
This is Jonathan Snyder with Fish and Wildlife Service. Wanted to reiterate the thanks to everybody, especially Leo and his other tribal council members and the community of Point Lay. And again, just reiterate that, you know, everyone's number one priority here is to protect the walrus while they're on shore, reduce any, you know, possibility for human-caused disturbance. If we all work together, we can accomplish those goals. So, if the media can help us to get that word out that protection here is everybody's number one priority. Thank you.
All right. Well, with that, again, this is Andrea Medeiros. I thank everybody for joining us, and we're going to go ahead and...
What does Leo have anything final?
Oh, hey, sorry. Leo, do you have anything final to add? Or Vera?
Comments on EWC.
This is Leo.
Go ahead, Leo.
I'd like to say thank you to everybody, but then just like... Jonathan said for us is that it takes all of us to protect the walruses and to protect what's happening with the walrus. So I request that everybody please listen to the rules that were set in place, because these were a joint venture and most of these rules came from the native village. And I'd like everybody to honor our wishes and to listen to the rules that are set in place, and please do not try to come to Point Lay for pictures, media, news groups, tourists. This community is too small, and we don't have the capacity to take care of visitors from around the world. And thank you all, and thank you.
All right. Okay. Thanks again for... Oh, Vera, did you have something to say?
We have no comments.
Oh, no comments, yeah. All right. Well, thanks again, everybody, and we'll look forward to seeing your stories, and we'll try to keep everybody updated on the status. And again, if you have follow-up questions, you can contact me, Andrea Medeiros, and my phone number is 907-786-3695, or you can reach me through email, my first and last name, separated by an underscore, at fws.gov. So, again, thanks again, and we'll hope to speak to you again in the future.
Thank you for your participation in today's conference. Participants, you may disconnect at this time.